This segment is sponsored by U.S. Gold, whose market cap is approaching $1 billion. And our friend Rob McEwen, former CEO of Goldcorp, owns a 22% stake. U.S. Gold discovered a large silver deposit in Mexico and has an aggressive exploration program while their Nevada project is moving towards production. U.S. Gold is the only gold exploration company listed on the New York Stock Exchange, and the symbol is UXG. This is King World News. I'm Eric King, and you're about to hear from one of the great ones, John Embry. Remember to go to our homepage at kingworldnews.com, where this week we have Rick Rule, founder of Global Resource Investments, discussing where he sees things headed in 2011, particularly gold and silver. Jeffrey Sout, chief investment strategist at Raymond James, gives his outlook for 2011, including a great story from the 70s gold bull, which illustrates we are nowhere near a mania. And with gold and silver still consolidating, don't miss the KWN Weekly Metals Wrap. Joining us now is John Embry, chief investment strategist at Sprott Asset Management. John, we're in the middle of this two-day correction here. We're getting slammed on gold and silver for the second day pretty hard. We were over another dollar down on silver earlier. And what are your thoughts here as you're watching this action?
Well, happy new year to open, Eric. And I guess for some people, the first few days haven't been all that happy. But I honestly believe that this may be the best opportunity you're going to get, at least from a price sense, to buy gold and silver in the next few days. I think these will probably, when this correction, however long it lasts, is over, will probably mark the lows for the year, which will then be the liftoff to the 11th consecutive year of higher gold prices. But I mean, the returns over the last 10 years, gold returned over 18% per annum. Silver over close to 24%. These are spectacular returns, and we haven't seen anything yet. We're not even close to the third leg, which is the blow-off.
John, when you say these will be the best prices of the year, though, that's a pretty powerful statement, and you could very well be right on that. I know your partner, Eric Sprott, is looking for this big move in the Huey up to the high 800s, and obviously that portends higher gold, higher silver prices, much higher gold and silver share prices as well. So this could be it.
Well, I think so. I mean, my partner, Eric Sprott, there's nobody that has higher regard for him than I do. I mean, he's on record as saying he expects a $50 silver price in the not-too-distant future, and we're talking months, not years. And one of the sort of the straws in the wind, I think, is, as you know, we started the Sprott Physical Silver Trust about 2 or 3 months ago. We still haven't got all our silver in yet. We're close. We've almost got every last bar. But, I mean, it's taken the better part of 2.5 months to get it in. So the suggestion that this physical market is tight probably isn't a strong enough suggestion. It's really tight.
We'll come back to that in a minute, the market being so tight. But I know you and I were buying this morning, John, personally. You probably for the fund as well, but I know we were personally buying. You have to have conviction in order to buy during these dips. And you have to know the companies. And I don't always think investors on their own can have the capacity to do that. But let's just talk about that for a minute. You had one company that was dipping 10%. You stepped in, were a buyer. It's already recovered, I think.
Yeah, it is. I mean, some of these things are very volatile. This is a fairly thin company, but it's exceptional value. And an order hit the market, and I sometimes wonder, is it stupidity or is it actually being engineered? But it doesn't make any difference. The price goes down like a rock, and those people that know what they're doing, they just step in and buy. This very same company, believe it or not, at the bottom of the market in 2008, basically sold for as low as 40 cents, and it earned 30 cents in the next year.
Wow.
So, I mean, the market can be absurd. And the key, as you just correctly said, if you know your merchandise, you get remarkable opportunities to step in and buy stuff at bargain prices. Unfortunately, an awful lot of people don't know the merchandise because it's a vast field, and it's hard to know everything. So I still think, and I've made this point many times, I think, before with you, is that the average person should be buying a well-managed, diversified gold fund, particularly one specializing in a lot of juniors, to get probably the safest entry with the best possible return.
I know we haven't been able to direct U.S. investors to your company previously, but obviously they can do that now through Rick Rule's company, Global Resources, because you purchased them. So that's been nice. I know there's been a lot of people on the U.S. side jumping in there, not only because Rick does a great job, but it's part of the Sprott umbrella now, right, under the Sprott umbrella. And that's worked out real well for you, that acquisition.
Oh, we're excited because, I mean, Rick Rule is one of just a class act from start to finish, and he's an extraordinarily successful investor, as is my partner, Eric Sprott. So I think the merger of the two is going to be very good for North American resource investors.
Let's go back to the market being tight in silver. James Turk and I have been chronicling that in the blog and in some interviews that we've been doing, and that has led to nothing but higher and higher and higher silver prices. We just fell from the $30 level. We're in the 28s today, but silver just continues to sort of consolidate here and move higher each time.
Well, without question, and I think it relates to the true state of the physical market for silver. There's infinitely more demand for physical silver than there is supply. I mean, all this stuff coming out of the ground is long since spoken for, like traditional industrial and medical uses and what have you. And now with investor interest picking up, I just saw it in the 3rd of January, there was 1.7 million silver coins sold in the United States, which was equal to about the amount that was sold in all of the month of December. So investment demand for silver is going off the chart. This can only mean dramatically higher prices. The volatility is coming from this ridiculous, you know, situation on the COMEX, where these massive short positions, one with the main perpetrator being J.P. Morgan. And I think these things will ultimately blow up in their face. So, I mean, I don't have any problem with sharply higher silver prices. It's a combination of the basic fundamentals for physical and this essential paper fraud which is going on.
Turn this now to the municipal side on the U.S. I know you're getting ready to do a piece on this, John, but the situation over here is really horrendous. It's actually a little bit frightening if you really understand it. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, I mean, the difference between the states and the municipalities and the provinces to some extent up here in Canada is that they can't print their own money. I mean, when the feds, if they sort of get a little bit sticky wicket with too little revenue and too many expenditures, they can just print it up. But when you're a state or a municipality, I mean, you're dependent on your tax revenues and sort of what you're forced to spend. A lot of the spending isn't discretionary. It's almost necessary. And that spending is rising in this very tough economic environment at the very time that revenues continue to fall, particularly because so many of them depended on real estate revenues, which have collapsed in many areas. I don't see a way out short of the feds having to bail them out, which is just going to make the problem in terms of money creation even worse. I don't see a way out. And the fact is that people have sort of got their eye off the ball to some extent because everybody's been focused on the problems in Europe. I would submit that the problems in North America at the state and local levels in many cases are as bad or worse as what's going on in Europe.
Let me ask you about your themes for 2011, John. Have you had a chance to think about that?
Yeah, I thought about it a lot. Basically, I think we're going to see more of the same. I mean, I don't see how you can possibly shut off the paper spigot without causing a depression, the likes of which would make the 30s look like a picnic. So I don't think they're going to do that. And if that's the case, then you've got to continue to focus on hard assets. And when you get these violent corrections, which you're going to be subject to all through the piece, you got to be in position to buy them. The things that I would be avoiding, like the plague, are bonds, particularly long bonds. And the stocks are tricky. I'm sort of agnostic a bit on stocks because I think in the world I see where money will continue to be debased, certain stocks are going to do really well. But it seems to me that the U.S. stock market has been propped up because for month after month, it's been going on incessantly. Investors have been withdrawing money from mutual funds and what have you, and yet the stock market keeps going up. And foreigners, I don't think, are wildly enamored of the situation either. So, you know, there's a third buyer in there. I believe it to be the government in this permanent open market operations where they feed money into their primary dealers. And that money is being funneled into the stock market, which has held the market up. So I'm a little nervous about the stock market, if the truth be known, in the short run.
What do you think fair value is on the stock market, John?
Well, I don't know if I'd put a figure on it, but it's the composition. Like, I mean, a lot of these financial entities that are significant weights in the market, I think, aren't worth a fraction of what they're trading for. On the other hand, you know, good companies like Johnson & Johnson and Exxon, that I have no problem with holding things like that. I mean, these companies are going to be great things to own if paper money is getting decimated.
Will there be a Weimar effect in stocks?
Yes, I think this is a subject of a great debate between me and one of my very closest friends who's a true Weimar advocate, and he just thinks stocks are going to go to the moon. I say simply that 90% of the public, if even not more, hasn't even thought of this concept yet, and they own stocks for the traditional reasons. And as things start to come unstuck, I think their first instinct will be to sell the stock. So I suspect there'll be a violent correction before any Weimar-like effect will fully take hold.
Okay, so look for one more bout of deflation.
Yeah, or threat of deflation, absolutely. Which, I mean, in the threat of deflation in the current environment, that just means more and more aggressive money printing. So when it comes to all of this, the one thing that I can tell you that I'm absolutely confident in holding and I don't worry a second about is gold and silver. In the case of everything else, I'm a little uncomfortable.
Let me ask you, John, about the juniors specifically. Now, we've talked about those having big gains. I think 2011, you and I both think some of these could take off. But consolidation, the mid-tiers, the majors, are going to start to pick some of these off as the Huey rises?
I would hope so. Like, I mean, I've been sort of an advocate of this for the longest time, because the one thing you do if you study the majors is that they do not have the reserve basis or the growth prospects internally to maintain their production profile. So consequently, all the gold is being found by smaller entities. It's just that's the way that it goes now. So, I mean, it seems axiomatic to me that as they get more confidence in the gold price as it moves higher, they naturally, I think, they'll step in and start to pick off some of these juniors. Like this company I was speaking of this morning that I love, my greatest fear about this company is somebody's going to pick it off too cheap.
That's why you have to have solid management that won't sell too cheap, isn't it, John?
And you've got to have solid shareholders that understand what they got and won't be sort of taken out for bad or lesser valued paper that looks like a good deal, but if you look at it closely, it really isn't.
I've talked with Rob McEwen about this off the air. The longer you can stay independent during this cycle and not sell your companies, the more you can get into that mania and really have that manic markup in the share prices, which will be insane. Right, John?
No, I have a great regard for Rob McEwen. I've known him well for a long, long time. And that is a brilliant observation, in my opinion, that the key is if you've got a good company that's in production in particular, I mean, you do not, under any condition, want to be taken over by a major, because the greatest leverage is going to come in a company like that, which is being undervalued today dramatically in comparison to what the valuation is being attached to the seniors.
I look at two companies that Rob has, and one's in the twos, you know, mid to high twos, and the other one's in the sevens today as I look. But when we go into the manic phase, John, assuming that Rob will keep these independent as long as possible, you just don't know where these will trade.
No, they can go a long way, Eric. I mean, if you go back and look at what happened at the end of the 70s, just going into 1980, I'd forgotten, actually, because it was a long time ago, and I'm not getting any younger. I had forgotten the degree of appreciation it took. We're talking thousands of percent. I don't think you have to grasp that immediately. I mean, all you have to know is they can double and triple here in the next while. And the fact that they continue to go on and end up thousands of percent, well, just don't sell too early.
Right. It's going to be tough to parachute out into that mania. And some say it will be different this time because it will be an economic reset, right, with a higher gold price, so then it may be fixed.
Pretty hard to know exactly how this is going to play out. I mean, I honestly think things are sufficiently dire that we're going to have to recast the monetary system before this is all over. And in such a undertaking, I suspect the gold may be remonetized. And given the amount of paper there is in the world, I mean, it will have to be remonetized at a price which would sort of stagger the doomsayers today on gold. I mean, there still is more people talking negatively on gold than there is positively, believe it or not.
John, you know, I look at sentiment and I'm just shocked, and I marvel at the fact that we keep edging higher and higher and higher net here, right? Because we're in the mid to high 1300s now in gold, very close to the highs, and sentiment is awful, you know, compared to what I thought it would be.
The public's not there. I mean, there's the early adapters and there's the shrewd investors and there's a few others who have good advisors. But by and large, the public isn't there. The statistic that people should pay attention to, I think, is the percentage of total financial assets that gold and gold shares and silver shares comprise. In peaks in through the 20th century, they reached as much as 25% of total financial assets. Today, they're around 1. So when you ever start to get negative on this subject, just think about that number.
That's huge, John, what you just said. When you really quantify that, I mean, it just shows to get into a bubble, there has to be a massive markup.
Oh, we're not even remotely. I mean, I have the utmost regard for Richard Russell, and he's written extensively on this. And I mean, he points out correctly that we're still a long way from the manic third phase. And when that takes hold, people aren't going to believe what's going to happen.
Let me ask you, John, would you mind giving out a couple of stock picks for the listeners?
Well, I'll tell you, the one I was talking about this morning, it's fairly thin, so you got to buy it cleverly on the TSX, which is Westo Mine. I mean, I know for a fact, because I study the company closely, that they're going through a low-grade cycle right now. But when they get back into better grades in the latter part of this year, and particularly next year, they're going to earn an incredible amount of money, and people just don't realize that. Their drilling success, which tends to be ignored by the market, is ensuring their longevity. So Westome, around $2.50 a share, to me is an absolute gift here.
What is the symbol on that for the listeners?
WDO.
WDO on the Canadian.
Yep.
Any others that you like, John?
I like another one up here, Lakeshore Gold. I mean, it's a little more richly valued, but they're really putting together a major ore reserve up in the Timmins area in Canada. I like places that are sort of in geopolitically safe and where there's already established infrastructure, because, I mean, the cost of this stuff can become prohibitive if you're trying to build a greenfield. So Lakeshore's already got all the infrastructure in place. They're proving up a massive, you know, we're talking millions of ounces. I think Lakeshore, which is LSG, trades around $4 on the TSX, is another one that is a solid investment in here.
John, let me ask you in closing here about price targets for gold and silver for 2011. Do you mind taking a stab at that?
I'd be disappointed if it didn't trade through 2,000 this year.
On gold?
Yeah. If gold were to make a run at that, silver is a layup for 50.
Okay, at least 50 on silver this year. I think Turk is looking for that also. And then on the HUI?
I'm not going to quarrel with my partner, Eric. He's a lot smarter than I am. And if he says 800, that's good enough for me.
Okay. And we used to see those kind of big moves. I think a lot of people just think that's unimaginable.
Well, people forget. Like, yeah. I mean, I think there's been one thing that has gone unremarked, and that is that there's been an enormous amount of shorting activity in gold stocks. I mean, there's been a lot of guys doing spread trades off the bullion. There's been naked shorting. I mean, when this is all overcome, I think that'll be part and parcel of this massive move that I envision.
Now, Dan Norsini's been bringing that up.
Has he?
Yes, on the KWN Weekly Metals Wrap.
I'm a great admirer of Dan's. I like him very much. I think his views are solid.
When you guys talk about that, what that creates, though, John, eventually, as we see the price of gold and silver rise, these hedgies that are doing that, they're in bad shape on some of these small ones, and you could see that trade blow up on them as far as a hedge.
Well, that's why I question whether Westome has any short activity, and I'd be surprised because it's a thin trader. But on the other hand, the way it trades, it looks like somebody's trying to protect a position.
Okay. All right. Fair enough on that. So we should look for some of these juniors, I guess, part of the explosion.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if we get a clean breakaway, and I mean, and we will, I mean, the cartel continues to fight violently on the other side, certainly the last 2 days successfully. But when we get a clean breakaway, I think the action in some of these stocks is going to knock your socks off.
John Embree, Chief Investment Strategist at Sprott Asset Management. Thank you for joining us on King World News.
Well, it's always a pleasure to chat, Eric. I mean, I think you're doing a great job of enlightening the public. And boy, given the misinformation they're being fed, they need all the good input they can get.
Be sure to tune in this week as we will continue to release interviews with the top people in the world throughout the week. Also, check out the King World News blog where we had interviews with John Embree, Jim Rickards, James Turk, as well as pieces covering gold shares for 2011, the richest man in the world moving into silver, and something from Pharos Trading.